From the City of Angels off the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie, and welcome to Coast AM. Next hour, entities behind our paranormal experience with Rosemary Ellen Guiley and Phil Imbrogno, authors of The Vengeful Djinn, unveiling the hidden agendas of genies. Should be fascinating. Here's what's happening. Well, here's an ominous sign. Hundreds of penguins that apparently starved to death are washing up on the beaches of Brazil, worrying scientists who are still investigating just what's causing them to die. About 500 of the black and white birds have been found just in the last 10 days. Most were called Magellan penguins, migrating north from Argentina, Chile, and the Falkland Islands in search of food in warmer waters. Many are not finding it. Autopsies done on several birds revealed that their stomachs were entirely empty, indicating that they likely starved to death. The federal government's oil spill chief said that the seepage 2 miles from BP's oil cap is coming now from another well, tamping down fears that leaks from the ruptured well mean it's unstable. Retired Coast Guard Admiral Thad Allen also said 5 leaks in and around BP's well are more like drips and aren't yet cause for concern. The leaks and seepage had raised concerns that the mechanical cap choking off the flow of oil was displacing pressure and causing leaks deep underground. That could cause instability in the seafloor and make the environmental disaster even worse and harder to fix. David Bloom's with us now, author of Alcohol Can Be a Guest. David, I don't know if I can believe this or not. I think this is a major story. What do you think?
Well, I'd say it's an enormous cover-up. You know, we talked about this weeks ago, George, that we expected, and Matt Simmons confirmed with his sources, that there was a huge plume of oil coming from the seafloor some miles away from BP's well. But this is a new well. There haven't been wells 80 and 90 miles offshore of Louisiana before of this depth. So anything in regards to another well would have been a shallow well. And so the story doesn't wash at all. In fact, BP's own figures show that over 2,000 pounds per square inch of leakage was going on in the well casing over this test period. And at that kind of pressure, when you've got oil and grit and gas blowing through rock, it's going to cut through it like a knife through butter. We assume that what's gone on is during the days that the cap was off, those few days, that a lot of pressure grouting was going on in the ruptures in the seafloor. And at this point, BP is hoping that those hold, and that's what the test is all about, is to see if the places they plugged up are going to stay plugged. But, you know, we expect that the jetting oil coming out of the well casing will probably resurface somewhere else, finding it's another path of least resistance.
And how many oil wells in the Gulf are leaking? My gosh.
Well, no one knows, because there are 27,000 abandoned wells in the Gulf. Most of them were never inspected when they were taken out of service. And there's a pretty good suspicion that about 10, 12, 13% of them could be at high risk of leaking. And no one knows if they actually are or not.
What a remarkable story. David, thank you. David's website, Alcohol Can Be a Gas, linked up to our Twitter feed at coasttocoastam.com. China rushed to keep an oil spill from reaching international waters while an environmental group tried to assess the country's largest reported spill to see if it was worse than had been disclosed. Crude oil started pouring into the Yellow Sea off a busy northeastern port after a pipeline exploded late last week, sparking a massive 15-hour fire. The government says the slick has spread now to a 70-mile square radius stretch of the ocean out there. More than 40% of homeowners seeking help from the Obama administration's flagship effort to rescue those at risk of foreclosure have apparently just dropped out of the program. The latest report on the program suggests foreclosures could rise in the second half of the year and weaken an already ailing housing market. Regularly using a mobile phone may increase the risk of tinnitus, which involves constant ringing or buzzing in the ear. According to a study, 50 million Americans suffer from it. Austrian researchers recruited 100 people with the condition and 100 without and compared mobile phone use. They found that tinnitus was over 70% more likely in those averaging 10 minutes of daily phone use. Mexican authorities searching a man with a bulge under his shirt at the airport in the nation's capital there found 18 monkeys hidden beneath his clothes. The investigators grew suspicious after the 38-year-old man became very nervous when asked what he was transporting. Two of the tiny TT monkeys, as they are called, he was carrying them in his belt. They were dead, and 16 of the others survived the journey from Peru. They don't know what they're going to do with him. Now, if you were old enough, where were you on July 20th, 1969? Well, I was glued to my family's television set as it flickered with live images of the first manned moon landing. Neil Armstrong eased his way down the ladder of the lunar lander and stepped off and said those immortal words, "This is one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind." Then a 19-year-old George Norrie was fixed right on the TV, listening and watching Walter Cronkite.
I think that our conquest of space is one of the great stories of the 20th century.
Never has there been before, nor will there be, anything like this pioneering adventure.
What a moment. Man on the way to the moon.
The landing on the moon presented an interesting emotional challenge for me. I had just as much time to prepare for that landing as the space program did. I watched it from the beginning.
30 feet, 2.5 down. Tranquility Base here. The Eagle has landed.
Oh, boy. And yet, when that vehicle landed on the moon, I was speechless.
Boy.
I really couldn't say a thing.
And when Walter rejoiced over man landing on the moon, America rejoiced with him.
Neil Armstrong, 38-year-old American, standing on the surface of the moon.
The Apollo 11 landing gave us all a vision of what might be. The dreams could be achieved. The voyage of Neil Armstrong, Buzz Aldrin, and Michael Collins, he's the astronaut that was orbiting above, captured our imaginations and excited our spirits. They showed us one door, one window to the future. A young, but not as young as me, Richard C. Hoagland was in the middle of all of this. We will reminisce with Richard in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Richard C. Hoagland is our science advisor, head of the EnterpriseMission.com. Richard, I will be on always remembering where I was in the birth of my three children. I will always remember where I was during the assassination of John F. Kennedy and the landing of the moon, which is forever etched in my soul. How about you?
It's the same. Well, two out of three. I don't have kids, so you got one up on me there. You know, I've been really thinking today about this in the context of what we're seeing on all the networks, all the satellite channels, all the cable channels, this endless nightmare in the Gulf. And I cannot help but contrast the condition of the United States of America 41 years ago tonight, as I was literally sitting side by side with the elite CBS team that was covering this extraordinary adventure, and how paralyzed and helpless we appear to be in solving a technical challenge which is certainly on a par, on the same magnitude level as landing men on the moon for the first time. And I was just talking to a friend of mine off stage here, and I was saying, you know, this is the reason why we have to have NASA. We have eviscerated the national ability to respond to major technological challenge in the 21st century, and we are beholden and being led around by the nose by a national, private, multinational corporation, which has zero interest in the United States of America and only owes its well-being and its allegiance to its stockholders. 99.99%, we don't even know who they really are. It is an untenable situation for the United States, and unless it changes, and I'm going to, in the next hour, give you some good news that it may about to change, we are finished as a major power on this planet.
Now, we need a goal, and so where do we stand with this NASA space program, with this administration's effort to do something, if anything.
Well, as you know, the president, when he finally got around to announcing his NASA policy in February of this year, disappointed an awful lot of people, old-timers, young guys, the new rocket crowd, the commercial space crowd, the space fanboys, as some people call them, because he didn't announce we're going anywhere. He canceled the previous administration's efforts, President George W. Bush, to return to the moon in Project Constellation, then go on to Mars and other places. And he basically put us on hold forever and ever and ever with only a dim, distant, possible twinge of a hope that we might go beyond low Earth orbit in our lifetime, George, you and me. And I'm here tonight to say that the Congress of the United States, both the House and the Senate, have done what Congresses should do in a bipartisan manner, Republicans and Democrats alike, standing shoulder to shoulder, and they basically told the president, you're not going to do that. You're not going to eviscerate NASA. You're not going to stop our return to the moon and beyond low Earth orbit. And we're going to have a heavy lift vehicle, somewhat in the vein of the Saturn V, within the time span of our lifetime, within the next few years, possibly as early as 2015, which is only a few years away, which is when the Obama administration said they were going to start thinking about creating a successor for the shuttle heavy lift vehicle and or the Saturn V. So you've seen both in the Senate and the House an extraordinarily strong pushback. And although there are divergent elements in both these bills, I think in the reconciliation process, which is the inevitable, end point of all legislation, you got to reconcile the House and the Senate, bills, we're going to get something that is very strong and much closer to what you and I have envisioned as we began this conversation in February of this year. The only thing that's missing, George, and the only thing that is not part of this discussion is really a destination.
Well, and let me ask you this. You know that we are not political on this program. We want the truth, no matter where it takes us.
We are. Come
okay?
On.
No, we're not. Whether it's left,
have a discussion
right.
These days without being somewhat political.
No, we're looking for the truth. That's the difference.
You mean we're bipartisan?
You know what?
Doesn't mean we're not political.
Well, you know what I mean by that. You know what I mean by that. My point is that being intuitive the way we are about events, right now, this administration is not going to get elected in 2012. Being that the case, what's going to happen to the space program when a new administration comes in? Because whatever this administration does today probably won't mean a thing in 2013.
Well, if the Congress does what it's intending to do, on both sides of the aisle, which is really remarkable. I mean, every other piece of legislation, I mean, we just went through this whole jobs bill thing where it required forestalling the cloture vote to basically end the technical filibuster to even get a vote on giving people money so they don't get put out of their house and home and they can feed their kids, which we've never had in this country before where things have become so incredibly partisan. The only bipartisan area where Republicans and Democrats appear to be acting for the benefit of the nation, for the people as a whole, are in the space committees. As I said on this program months ago, predicted that was what was going to happen, and it has. What will happen if this administration goes away in two more years is the next president, the next administration, will have a space program which is tooled up, ready for the pronouncement of where to go next. We'll have the tools, we'll have the rocks, we'll have the technology. It will not be, endlessly doing this low Earth orbit stuff, which really isn't getting us anywhere. It will have the tools, it will have the car, it'll have the car keys. It simply will be missing, as I said a moment ago, the destination. Now, the one thing that I've really been thinking very hard about as I watch this Gulf crisis is that we don't have the equivalent of a national agency which has the technology in its toolkit, which could basically say to BP, okay, stand aside, we will solve this.
Exactly.
And like we landed on the moon when everyone said it was impossible, we could have solved this a month ago,
That's
two
right.
months ago, 3 months ago, instead of watching this Chinese water torture in the form of oil, not only despoiling despicably our environment, and the remediation efforts in this terms of this corrects it, providing extraordinary toxins that will kill people and already are killing people slowly and quietly, if we can now believe the lab tests on the toxicity of this water that people think is okay, and the seafood and the shellfish which is in it, which is, we're being told is okay, but we don't have the technological means to actually step in, move the corporation aside, and solve it ourselves as a nation, as a people. We are dependent tonight on this corporation, which has done nothing but from day one lie to us again and again and again. And that's what happens when you put a shining jewel like NASA on the back burner for 30 years from the end of Apollo to now and not keep it where you need it, because you never know what you might need it for. Technology is the way we live or die on this planet, and tonight we are dying because we don't have adequate public technology to solve a relatively simple technological problem.
What happened to the days when we used to allow scientists into this country and we supported them and we gave them the backing they needed to get the technology done?
Well, we have shifted as a culture, and you say we're not political. Well, I'm going to make some very political statements. We have decided more important than anything else. We have invested enormously in the financial sector, which does nothing but basically play Russian roulette with our money. And when they win, they win. And when they lose, we all lose. But they don't lose because we bail them out. That sense of priorities, that sense of we don't make things in this culture anymore. We simply make money. We simply rearrange paper. We simply, you know, bet on, you know, credit derivatives or whatever, you know, other thing they would create in some back room. That's what's happened, George. We are no longer the United States that you and I grew up in because we've stopped making things and making the future. And that's what NASA was and still is. That one little beacon in this dark night that needs to be rekindled, because without a NASA, without a cultural expression of public investment in the cutting edge, in the things that are deemed impossible by anybody else but can be brought off because you pull the right team, the right managers, the right engineers together, and you give them a clear goal, you can see on your TV screens tonight, there's a BP spill cam live showing a problem under the Gulf that should have been solved months ago if we were the United States we used to be.
Will anybody listen to you?
Well, at some point, the pain and agony and all those people who are now out of a job along the Gulf is going to get enough that there will be a political revolution. Oh, that word again, politics. We're coming up to a midterm election. If people don't send a clear and strong message and support the people who are in favor of the future, i.e. supporting NASA, and kick those people out who are not, I think this culture is doomed, because the problems we're going to face in the rest of the 21st century and the 22nd are totally technological. You're seeing the problems of energy, of limited environment, of despoiling our air, our water, our land use policies. You're seeing the problem of you know, overseas flight of all technologies and productivity to other nations. You're seeing us borrowing tons and tons of money from other countries like China, as opposed to doing it ourselves here at home. You're seeing, I watched T. Boone Pickens last night on Larry King. Mm-hmm. He has got a mission, a crusade, to replace the 18-wheeler fleet, dependent on diesel fuel, oil, with natural gas, which is here under the United States of America. That's a place to start. That's a practical thing we could do. And in 8 years, we could be self-sufficient to the point where we would not need to be drilling in deep water because of the inherent dangers and the fact that we cannot guarantee that another deep water horizon won't happen tomorrow.
If we were trying to go to the moon today, brand new, never went before, under the way everything has been set up, do you think we could even get there?
No.
No.
I mean, when Bush set up Constellation, when the president set up the Constellation program to return to the moon, what was the first thing all the NASA engineers did? They fled to every museum,
right,
which had a spacecraft or a spatula or a piece of hardware from the Apollo era,
to try to remember
it. And
they
took 3D photographs to try to figure out, how did those guys do it?
Yeah. How did it work then?
It was like Back to the Future.
It's like the plans were stuffed away somewhere.
Well, they were. I mean, the Apollo Saturn V plans literally were destroyed.
Amazing. Amazing. Well, this is the anniversary, 41 years, Richard. Can you believe it?
No.
It just seems
like 41 years.
Seems like yesterday. Well, stay with us. We're going to come back in just a moment with Richard C. Hoagland, enterprisemission.com, and we'll take your phone calls, and we'll also get his take again about this oil leak in the Gulf of Mexico as well. We'll be right back. Well, next hour, Rosemary Ellen Guiley joins us along with Phil Imbrogno as we talk about the vengeful djinn unveiling the hidden agendas of genies. It's not what you think. And we'll be back with your calls and Richard C. Hoagland on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast with Richard C. Hoagland. This hour, we'll take your calls. Richard, a professor down in Texas has been muffled. I think he's been capped, where he said that the methane levels in some areas out there a million times higher than normal.
Yeah, this is Professor Kessler at
Yes.
Texas A&M.
Scary story.
Well, the story is that BP's bought him off. I mean, this is really scary because this could kill a lot of people, many of them listening to us tonight, George. Let me repeat that. This is not a movie. This is not, you know, scare tactic. This isn't Fear Factor. This is real. What BP is about to do, in lieu of anybody with technological competence in this government taking charge like NASA would have if it had the expertise and the engineering that it should have but doesn't have now tonight because of the cutbacks and the funding misdirections and the lack of leadership, et cetera, et cetera. What they're planning to do because of whatever they found out from these pressure tests with all the weird stuff going on around them that the government is kind of alluding to and then pulls back, they're planning to try another top kill. In other words, when they've got this well capped, they're now talking, and Admiral, you know, Allen today was kind of saying that it looks like they might go ahead and let them do this.
Mm-hmm.
Insane. They're planning now to pressurize that cap and try to force drilling mud into the well from the top again with the cap on so you don't have oil gushing like we had weeks ago when they tried it before.
When they tried it before, yeah.
The problem is that if you already have weird stuff happening, if you have leaks springing up around the well, and George, your instincts were absolutely correct, the idea that this leak they've now identified a few miles away and that David Bloom was talking about is from another unrelated well is horsepucky. It's absolute garbage. None of these leaks were springing up before this well blew itself out. So why would they suddenly do it afterwards unless there was a connection? Now, let me tell you why they may think, some of the honest guys, they're dealing with a separate well because the oil has a different DNA. It has a different chemical makeup. You understand why that could be, right?
Wherever you may be, you mean.
Well, because that oil is coming from a much higher layer being pressurized by all the methane coming from the deep, 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 deep well.
Sure.
That they still aren't admitting is down to 30,000 feet, according to one of our very serious inside reports from BP leakers, pun intended, whistleblowers, who, again, cannot go on camera, cannot go on mic because they would be fired and attacked by their colleagues who are more desperate for their jobs than they are to save the lives of a lot of people in the Gulf. So that oil that's coming up, even if they claim based on scientific evidence it's not related, well, of course it wouldn't be, because it would be oil from the upper formations that are being pressurized by the lower formations because of this damn leaking well bore from the deep horizon catastrophe. So we dismissed that right away. Now, have you been looking at any of the videos on YouTube?
Oh, yeah, I've been looking at that. And also the big story today was that their BP command center may have been photoshopped.
Well, yeah, I mean, these guys are just, they keep doing the stupidest stuff.
I mean, there's nothing you can believe in.
Well, in a court case, and this is why I don't understand why the government has not taken charge. Matt Simmons, the guy that David was quoting just a few minutes ago, who was one of George W. Bush's energy advisors, mm-hmm. formed Ocean Engineering, wrote a key book on peak oil, has been an investment banker involved in the oil business for, 30, 40 years, who knows the business up and down. He's been saying for weeks what we've been saying, that there are leaks elsewhere, a huge rift about 7 miles away where the oil is really gushing from. And what we're seeing on this riser and this capping and all that is basically just a stage play. It's kind of diversion. Well, if there is oil leaking up in more amounts now, it means that the pressurization that's going on is forcing that oil to come up in places that it wasn't coming up before. Classic oil breaking through barriers, breaking the crust, mm-hmm. breaking the geological strata. which of course goes back to the key thing that I've been demanding from you know, almost day one, a few weeks afterwards, and we finally got the inside tip as to the rising boat on the seafloor. We need those mud logs. We need the tsunami buoy warning network spread across the Gulf. We need to continue to send emails to Ed Markey, who, as you know, weeks ago tried, after the coast listeners emailed him, to get these mud logs from BP, and they just stiff-armed him. They stonewalled him. They said, basically, go away. You're only a congressman heading a key committee. We don't answer to you. This is nuts. These are U.S. leases on U.S. territory within 50 miles of shore. BP should be answering to the United States government, meaning we the people, not doing their own thing. And what they're about to do now, which is to pressurize this well, they could literally cause the damn Gulf floor to erupt, based again on data we have seen since last Thursday when they closed in this well, and then all these, as Admiral Allen says so euphemistically, anomalies have occurred. What the hell is an anomaly when you've got an ROV, remotely operated vehicle, 1,500 feet above the Gulf floor? That's as tall as the former World Trade Towers, right, George?
Huge.
And you see this huge explosion of stuff coming up with rocks and debris and gas clouds and sediments and all this higher than the World Trade Towers, under an ocean which has got 2,400 PSI on every square inch pressing down on the Gulf floor. So that means the methane pressure is to toss something up against
that kind of pressure has got to be incredible.
It's incredible because, remember, you're not dealing with the density of air. You're dealing with the density of water at a mile down. And to get a cloud of stuff thrown up in front of those cameras, they're all over YouTube. Just go look. Google, you know, BP cameras, underwater methane explosions. You'll find them. To pressurize this well in this new top kill, which they've now termed a static kill, yeah, the people they're going to kill are the people on shore if this damn thing blows. And the only recourse we have tonight, George, sorry for getting a little bit hot under the collar here, but when I see people deliberately doing damn stupid things, I get mad when nobody reins them in who represents we the people.
Well, that's you, and that's what you're doing. Let's go to Jack in Orlando, Florida. Go ahead, Jack. You're with us.
Good evening, gentlemen. Thank you for the privilege, George, to be on your show. And I'd like to pray for some latitude, please. I'd like to make a comment, and then I'd like to ask Mr. Hoagland a question. Mr. Hoagland, first of all, I want to commend you and you as well, George, for having this important dialogue. Your excellent dissertation on the significant importance of NASA historically, that it's a crown jewel of our nation. That it's really paramount. If you think about it, we would have never had any of the technological advancements that we have enjoyed for the last 30-plus years in this country that has provided countless jobs. I mean, think about it. If it wasn't for the dollars and the research by the most brilliant scientists in the world history that were involved with NASA in early days before Apollo and going all the way through the forward, if it wasn't for all that came out of the space program, we would have never had an Intel. We would have never had a Microsoft. Now, there's people out there that are innocently naive, and they say that's not true. Those are the fruits of hard-earned labor of brilliant engineers. Well, that's true. However, I suggest to you, those opportunities,
Where'd you go?
He got cut off. But let me continue what he was saying. NASA has been our national treasure.
They got him.
What?
They got him.
Whoever. National has been a national treasure because, look, every culture has to spend some money on the long-term future. It has to bet on the come. It has to basically put money aside, almost fritter away money, that you expend on things that may or may not pay off in the logical conclusion that some of them will, and the things that will make you all much richer. That's what NASA has been for its entire existence. It's been our collective bet on the future. And it has paid off extraordinarily well, as he said, in IC circuits and remotely operated vehicles and satellite television and, you know, Twitter and everything you look around in your office or home is impacted in some way or another by the NASA monies that have been spent over the last half century. The fact now that this administration is planning to almost eviscerate NASA, to do nothing with NASA except to, you know, put some money into technology in the hopes that someday it may pay off. The reason that NASA's previous technological investments paid off is because it had a mission, it had a goal, it had a timeline, it had a clear destination, it had a clarion call to be better tomorrow than we are today, and that's what's missing. And that's why tonight you can't pick up the phone and say, NASA, plug this damn leak and clean up the Gulf and let's move on, because that expertise does not exist anywhere in the government or in private industry, because no one has invested in that kind of technology. And we've seen it now in these congressional hearings, where basically we're sitting here at the mercy of a multinational that has lied to us repeatedly over and over again from day one. And even tonight, the story is they're lying about their command center and faking photos in it in Photoshop. This is nuts.
And I wonder if Red Adair, if he were alive today, if he'd been able to plug this. You know, he was the one who put out all the fires in the wells, but I bet he could have come up with a plan for this.
Well, BP has had helplines or phone lines or internet stuff, you know, websites devoted to, oh, tell us your thoughts. They have put every outside idea in the trash can and come up with their own stupid nonsense like this new static kill, which, as I said before, if the worst case scenario happens, it will wind up killing people.
By the way,
we can't let that happen.
Tom said the caller who simply disappeared was calling anonymously, gave a different name, didn't want anybody to know where he was calling from. So he was calling from Florida. Maybe he was at the Kennedy Space Center, and they clipped him.
Maybe.
Let's go to Toronto, Canada, international line. Go ahead, Tom.
Oh, thank you, George. Thank you, Richard. You guys are amazing. I'm really impressed the way you explain matters, and thank you very much for everything. What I want to say is America gave the world a vision, inspiration, and so many good things that came out of the space and all the, you know, the movies that we watch about Star Trek and all those things, and the invention of a computer and all those things. But what's the problem now is America become America is dominating the world and plagiarizing the world, and instead of focusing on those inspiring things that to follow. So how do America end up being
the corporations, Tom, took over. That's what happened.
Oh, if you see the world now, it hates America. Since Obama came, it's cooled down, but it's still like the hate index too high. But I don't like that. I wish America becomes back to the inspiration world. How do you think this is going to go back?
Rich, how much do you blame the big corporations, the greedy corporations behind this?
Well, I blame the political system that allows corporations to buy politicians. I mean, the House and Senate are bought and paid for by corporations.
We always have been, Richard.
Yes, we have been. We've been taken over by private entities.
You know, maybe it was always this way. Maybe we were just so naive as people.
No. You and I are old enough to have experienced then and now.
We've experienced all of it.
And we know that the culture has changed radically. You know, the political discourse has become coarser, more polarized. There seems to be no, you know, except again on the space committees, no vision for the commons, meaning the common good. It's all about political upsmanship, one-upsmanship. You know, this whole jobs bill was held hostage because the Republicans think if they can make the economy really bad, that they'll sweep into election and take control of the House and the Senate, which, of course, is not keeping the country's objectives at first and foremost. It's their private political careers. And funded now by a political system kind of supported by the Supreme Court ruling just a few months ago that unlimited corporate, you know, influx into the political process is de rigueur. It's allowed. It's free speech. Meaning if you think it's bad now, wait till 2012.
But we're also at a point, Richard, where even the media has changed dramatically from what it used to be. I mean, I was on Larry King's show a couple of years ago, all right? They spent, everybody there spent more time getting makeup put on instead of talking about the real issues that people
like a real
were there.
Radio guy, George.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's crazy. And nowadays these folks on all the networks are more, you know, they're so competitive with each other and, you know, about what they say and what wardrobe they get that they've lost touch of the real issues that are going on in America. I mean, the last 2 days, you've had stories about Lindsay Lohan going to jail, which we didn't cover, and, you know, this lady from the USDA who was wrongly told
absolutely
to resign.
Victimized for political,
you know,
purposes.
The media plays a little clip of a videotape that she played and had, and they didn't play the whole thing. And if you'd listened and watched the whole thing, you would have realized she was talking about how she has changed in her life.
It's an incredible
and
story.
And the farmer that she helped tonight was telling everybody she saved his farm.
Yep.
It's amazing.
It was a transformational story, and I really think ultimately she's going to get her job back and she'll wind up with her own TV show, because she needs to be a bellwether for all these kids that need leadership. They need heroes. They need people doing real things again, as opposed to the fake, stupid stuff that preoccupies television. So, yeah, we're in total agreement on that. Let me say one thing here. There is a bright spot on the horizon.
Where?
Phobos and Lutetia. I have to pronounce that correctly.
Lutetia's the asteroid.
Lutetia's the asteroid.
Unless Robin doesn't know, you're seeing somebody else.
Phobos is the inner moon of Mars, which we have demonstrated in our white paper is artificial, photographed by ESA months ago. Lutetia is the asteroid that the other ESA spacecraft, Rosetta, flew by, you know, about a week and a half ago, which also turns out to be stunningly artificial.
It has a strange-looking face to it, I'll tell you.
Well, it's incredibly geometric, and the closer you look and the more data you look at, the more obvious it is that those two things are related because, George, they're giant spacecraft. Look, if NASA had been allowed politically to continue going where no man had gone before, at least in the modern era, by now we would have bases on the moon. We would have the technology available from our dim, distant ancestors. We would be off oil. We would be in a totally new political, cultural, and scientific and technological environment. We'd be protecting the Earth. We would be feeding billions of people who desperately need a leg up energy-wise and must not repeat our oil fallacies and incredible problems we've had over the last 150 years. But instead, we've had a managed system that has put us further and further and further into the oil box. So tonight, we are basically facing a potential catastrophe, a tsunami in the Gulf caused by a corporation that cares nothing about anything but the bottom line, ripping us off, somehow managing, co-opting the political system of the United States, Congress, and the administration in doing dumb, stupid things to basically hide how many gallons or barrels of oil that their own inexperience and lack of expertise has allowed, and maybe even, you know, massive negligence has allowed to be poured into the Gulf of Mexico. It's all about the bottom line. There's nothing about the future except this one little bright glowing candle called NASA, which, because the House and Senate in a bipartisan manner are deciding that President Obama's vision has no vision at all, are going to put a real program in place. And the really interesting part of the story, George, is the president has quietly given the word to House and Senate that he will sign the bill if they come up with the right bill between them, which means we are back in the ball game for going back to the moon, getting access to this technology, and actually having a future. But it's going to depend on the vociferousness of people like this audience, sending Ed Markey demands for those mud logs, sending the White House demands to sign the joint conference bill for NASA when it comes due, which will be in a few months, and basically demanding the future that has been taken from them for the last 40 years by skullduggery and forces in the dark that do not have our best interest in mind.
That's Richard C. Hoagland. Thanks, Richard. And when we come right back, we will be talking about the vengeful djinn.